along, we'll become, we will acquire many new and fast friends. Now, this will be a little ice-breaking ceremony to get our meeting off. So, I'm going to start off in the big city area, and ladies first. I'd like to call on Margaret W. from Atlanta to come up and give us a few words. Margaret?
I'm going to kill Lillian's husband by marriage, Joe. Arnold, I guess. My name is Margaret, and I am an alcoholic. By the grace of God, and because this program works in my life, it has not been necessary for me to take a drink today. I don't know, Speedy. Here I am back there begging his bride to say a few words and, you know, thinking I've got it made. And here I am, and I know she can't be as frightened as I am. I know that here a few months ago that someone asked me, how does the program of Alcoholics Anonymous work? And I remember hearing a man stand up before a microphone one time and said, it works just fine. And this is just about how it is with me. How did it work and how did it happen? The only thing that I can remember about how it happened that I think was responsible for bringing me into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because after a two-week drunk, waking up on a Monday morning and going in to wake up my child and tell him to get up and get ready for school, and I proceeded with the thing that I did every other morning when I woke up. I went back and put on the bacon and immediately got sick and immediately had to get to start that same old thing of trying to get a drink to stay down. And Chuck didn't come in the kitchen, and I went back for him. And I said, Chuck, what is the matter? Why aren't you coming on in for your breakfast? And he said, I'm not going to school today. And I said, why? And he said, because if I don't get some help for you, Mother, that you're going to die. And that morning, for the first time in my life, maybe that was my moment of truth. Because what I saw in that child's eyes was something that I had never seen before. It was pity. There was no love. And his mother proceeded to take another drink and go back to her bed. And for the rest of that day, I crawled back and forth from the bathroom to the bed. The same old story. But late that afternoon, the telephone rang, and that child had been on the phone all day, calling, trying to get in touch with our friends, to get a doctor, not only for me, but for his father, too. And that night, I dropped down on my knees, and I said, God, help me. This is all I could say. I didn't know how to pray. I didn't have any right to pray. I had known how to pray, yes. And I remember that he told me that night that there was help and that there would be help for me. And I said, Chuck, I don't have a right to ask for it. And he said, well, Mother, pray. And I said, Chuck, I can't pray. And he said, yes, you can. You can pray my prayer. And together that night we prayed, now lay me down to sleep, because that was all his mother was capable of praying. But the good part of the story is that the following Thursday night I went to my first meeting of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The beautiful part to me is that the love has been restored in that child's eyes. He stood up last Sunday for his daddy's 11th birthday. And he said there was a time in his life that he didn't think his mother and father could stay sober for 11 days, much less 11 years. I'm proud that I'm an alcoholic. Had it not been for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't be standing here today. I'm proud that I'm an alcoholic because it's given this child something. He stands up before groups of people and says that it's taught him a way of life. I'm pretty happy, pretty comfortable, and I'm getting a little bit better in front of a microphone. There's been a day that I couldn't even open my mouth. I just get up here and identify myself. But I want you to know that I love you and that I'm grateful for this new way of life. Thank you.
Well, I just got a little note, and I pulled my first boner of the convention so far. I'm not going to let it pass, though, because I do feel I shouldn't have forgotten this, because it starts us off in the proper spirit. So I'll make a deal. We'll thank God for Margaret and her little talk and what she has achieved. And then let's open this meeting in the manner in which we customarily do, in the manner in which we should, properly, to place us in the right attitudes for sharing in this program. So if you will forgive me and bear with me now, let's have a moment of silent meditation followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I think we'll all feel better now. All right. I have another one here I'm looking forward to. I haven't heard in quite some time. A man that I've seen at numerous meetings and spent quite some time with. Tom Al from Louisville, would you come up and give us a word, Tom?
Thank you, Jerry. Jerry warned me that he was going to call on me, and I am Tom Lindsay, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Jerry said he wanted us to talk about 15 minutes, and I said if I talk a minute and a half, I'll do well. But as Margaret said a minute ago, this program, what is Alcoholics Anonymous? How does it work? To me, Alcoholics Anonymous works through people. I get teased a lot by my sponsor and others in that I came into Alcoholics Anonymous as an Al-Anon. And as Lib says, I slipped in the back door until I realized that I was an alcoholic. And through the grace of God, I'm sober today and enjoying this wonderful fellowship in AA. And go back a little bit to last summer. We were over here, Lib and I, to meet our children who were in Alabama. This was a good meeting place. And, of course, we got with Joe and Lillian and started talking about this beautiful place for a meeting of alcoholics, just to get together for fellowship and sociability and a good time. And we were first going to just list a few people that we knew and that we knew would all like to be together. And you know, that list grew and grew, and this is what's come of it. And of course, this is the early bird, but tomorrow and the next day we'll see, I think, a large fellowship of wonderful people. And if you can all get what I have gotten from AA and the fellowship in AA, you'll get a great lift and a fine new way of life. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you, Tom. I think I know what was the matter. I had to do something to bring my face around to harmonize with this vest I've got on. Boy, isn't that a dandy? It's a Valentine's vest. Tom, it was nice to hear from you. I think it's about time now that we change the pace a little bit and heard from another of the fair sect. And I'm particularly anxious to hear this girl, Susan R. from Birmingham. Susan, you come up.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I won't say my name again for the moment. I am so very, very grateful to be here. This is my first retreat. And if you have trouble understanding me, I got out of a sick bed to come. And I'm just going to take away so much from here that it'll last a long time, I know. I am very definitely an alcoholic and have been for many years. Mine was a very torturous path to arrive at what peace of mind that I have today. And I tried every way that is conceivable or that I could dream up to be able to drink without disgracing myself, my family, or whomever I was with. And of course, you know the answer to that. Nothing worked. I became sicker every time. Each hangover was worse than the one before and took longer to get over. I managed one time to stay sober 8 years, but that was through fear. I was married to an alcoholic. His pattern was to drink about every 6 months. So it was not so much the program that was keeping me sober, it was more the fear that he would get drunk and that the marriage would fall apart. Well, the marriage fell apart anyway. But that fear, I had to do an about face and start all over again, because the program was so entirely different then to me than what it is now. And I do believe, as our life changes, this program takes on entirely different meaning. I was the kind of a drunk that liked to be the life of the party, dance on top of tables, the best dancer on the floor, the best musician, and I was the best of anything that I thought of at the time. And I delighted in playing some sort of a role, pretending to be something that I wasn't, and have a good listener. And I could always fall in love on the dance floor if he was a good enough dancer. The music was good and the lights were low, so forth. So I spent most of my life, it seems, either married or getting a divorce or engaged and getting ready to marry again. That's four times. So I decided that I'd better call a halt. I wonder how many of you have heard of St. Anne's Home in Birmingham. Anybody? Well, this is a home for women alcoholics. Last April, I went there as a resident, and they can accommodate 18 girls, and there are three staff members. We have a director, and there are two assistants. Well, you can imagine 18 alcoholic women in one home. There must be very, very strict rules and a very rigid program to be followed to keep the whole place from blowing up. And I was one of those that was very resentful about having to follow such rigid rules. At my age, I had been independent many years, and I just couldn't see having to do this, having to do that, and there are certain days that you don't do this, and you must do this, and so on and so on, and you never leave the house without signing out exactly where you're going. I must know where you are all the time. There is a requirement of one closed meeting, one open meeting every week. Church is a must, because this is a Christian home. There is a noon meeting every day at the home, conducted by someone from the outside. And this is simply wonderful. Since December, I have been a member of the staff. And it is just wonderful working with these girls. You do counseling, you do just almost anything. Our biggest problem is to get the girls to stay long enough so that they can rehabilitate themselves, become employable in some special field, learn to be responsible people. Respect and grasp the AA program and hang on to it. And this is what our work involves. And I can tell you, I just wouldn't change this from teaching that I have done in the past. I wouldn't exchange it for anything. The teaching, the medical secretary, or the best secretary in Washington, D.C., anything. Capitol Hill, it doesn't make a bit of difference. I have finally, I think, been divinely guided to St. Anne's, and I love it. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Susan. Can't you just imagine being cast into the snake pit with 18 women alcoholics in various stages of recovery? Ha ha! Oh, boy. You know, I've been sitting here looking at this great big grin on this happy individual's face. He just seems to be beaming. It seems to agree. I notice that his face also begins to take on the looks of a squirrel storing up for the winter months. I'd like to hear from this newlywed. Speedy, would you come up and give us a break?
Good evening. I am Speedy Moore, an alcoholic, liquor drinker, par excellence, Cobb County drunk, Meriwether. I've been asked out of this county by the sheriff. Had to be a friend of some of my ex-relatives in this town. So I hope they don't know I'm here. I believe the invitation still stands for me to leave. It has been a great week already. My fringe benefit, Patricia, she'll celebrate her second birthday next week, Valentine's Day, and a few other things, and already I've got 2-3 things to remember, more than I can remember already. Something about being sober doesn't seem to help your memory any. I used to write myself notes where I hid my liquor. Because I got to where I couldn't find it. And it was such a job, so I finally decided I'd write myself little codes. And then no one else would know where I hid it either, you see. And then the next day I'd go get this little piece of paper, if I could find the paper first. And then I'd look at my notes. Unfortunately, I was never able to read them. So sobriety does help things. I do remember some things well. I'm like Margaret. I'm grateful. I don't want to find any excuse not to belong to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I see too many people spending too much time. If they spend as much time, I believe, and I'm going to take the inventory, working at belonging to this program rather than trying to figure out some way they did not belong to it, I believe they'd find themselves much happier. Certainly, I'm a happy drunk. I'm a happy alcoholic. I believe in being good to old Speedy. Believe me, as you can easily see, I believe in being good to me. Whether or not you're good to you or not, you got a problem. But I'm going to be good to me, and this is one of the reasons I'm here. I enjoy being in the fellowship. I enjoy the people. I don't believe, someone asked me, are you going to devote all your life to AA? I mean, that's all you're going to do is just see AA people? Aren't you going to talk with anyone else? I said, what for? Why do I need them? I don't need anyone else. There's enough people in AA to suit me, and I'll never enjoy all the things that AA can offer to me if I just grab them. I just won't live that long. So you people just suit me just fine. And I certainly am glad to be here, and I know I'm going to enjoy every minute of it. Thank you very much.
You know, I've always heard that there were those famous last words. Has anybody else got anything to say that you should never say in an AA meeting? That runs into an interminable time. But I ask these speakers to talk for 10 or 15 minutes, and I swear it seems like they can't get off the ground. I know they've got longer stories than that. So you don't need to feel quite cut so short, people. You can share a little bit more with us. I'd like to go now to a man who says that he is from there and not from someplace else. Tommy from Lakeland, Georgia. He says it's not Lakeland, Florida. Tom, would you come up?
Hi, folks.
Hi, Tom.
That's my first time to get talked through one of these, I believe, except in a prison one time. My name is Tom Exum. And I'm not only grateful, I'm happy that I have been the alcoholic route. And I started it with a father that was an alcoholic and a good man. But he didn't know what was wrong with him. So it puts me in a happy spot. If I go to see the drunk and he's too drunk or in jail, I start out with the children, Alateenan or Al-Anon. And it gives me a little bit better chance to work in, I believe. I might just forget about what I was going to say and just freeze up and not say nothing. But I heard one the other day, and I never can get a laugh much out of anything, but I got a kick out of this. A fella told another and says, "Yes, I know about you. You can't think of a thing in this world but what you don't know about." And to me, I thought, well, now how little he could know, so he wouldn't know much about anything. And I stayed around as close as I could to AA quite a few years, and I've grown happy with it and so on. So now if I want to drop out and get into something else, I don't know anything else. So I'm still happy to be here this afternoon. And I hope I can be around for another few years. I would have rather been one of the first ones up here because I've heard too many good things said that I can't come up with. And you know, an alcoholic wants to be the best or he don't want to be anything. I would like to mention one or two things that's happened during my time around AA that, as far as I'm concerned, it was the Lord that directed me and what I said. I remember when we had a convention, the Georgia State Convention at Valdosta, one of the men from the General Service Office didn't make it. Had trouble with somebody in the hospital, something that kept him from coming. So they put Dr. John, he just got in AA good then, they put him on Saturday afternoon and moved the Saturday afternoon speaker to Sunday morning. He was from Washington. And we had an old gentleman down in the Valdosta that kind of went for Mr. AA. And yet I don't think he ever made a 12-month sobriety period. He done a lot of good, but then at the same time he was doing bad, such as taking his loving cup and taking up money for AA on the street and going to the bar and drink beer out of it. Now that was happening along at that time, and two or three of the fellas got so mad, so when the first day of the convention, he was sitting in the lobby hotel, and they come to me threatening to throw him out because he's going to try to mess up AA. So I just kind of softened up. I said, well, he's not bothering anybody. Something might happen this time. We don't know. Just don't bother. Pay attention to him. So I noticed this Sunday morning speaker that buddied around with him. And Sunday morning, just before, about 3 minutes before he walked up on the stage and the meeting started, I walked up and I said, Charlie, I see you buddying around with Uncle Joe. He says, yeah, I like Joe down. I said, well, I do too. And I've been around a while and he seems to do some good, but then he turns around and tears it down. And it seemed to me like he's more of a drunk than he is an alcoholic. Well, the expression that hit that fellow's face, it tore him, cut him to the bottom, quick. But about halfway through his talk, he brought it up about Uncle Joe and how he needed loving, he needed attention. Anyway, when he got through, these same fellows that had all the malice towards him and resentment in their heart, they turned back and started to have some love for Uncle Joe. And when Uncle Joe died in the rest home, there was one of these fellows and his wife was there about an hour before. My point is, what I said, I don't know why I said it, but I just walked up to Charlie and what I said cut him so deep. He in return comes back and starts these fellas, give them a feeling of love for Uncle Joe, and probably save two or three of them from getting drunk. To me, that's the Lord working with us. You don't ever know what you're going to say, how you're going to say it, or what good it'll do. Another time, I'd like to say this for people that come and stay around a few years and getting along good and they think they've got it made. I don't believe any of us know how long we've got it made unless we stay into this thing 100%. When I was around about 6 years, getting along good, wouldn't let nothing throw me off balance. But I had an invitation to go to Atlanta from one of the associate judges up there. They was trying to figure out or get something started to catch the revolving alcoholics. And I spent 2 or 3 days up there working with the old fellow that being with him that they'd put on the payroll, and I reckon we went in every court and all through the police set up the biggest part of it. And I suppose my nerves was kind of taxed a little bit. But we had a assembly meeting in Macon. And I rode down with Clarence from Atlanta. He was delegated that time. By Sunday morning, 6 people out of 7 that I'd started to say something about what I'd been into up there and what I saw working, what they're trying to do. They didn't hear me, but they cut in and told me I was going to get drunk. I'd be back on Skid Row. So, now, these people didn't realize what they said to me. I don't think it was just kind of like I spoke to Charlie that morning about Uncle Joe. Anyway, I sit in that assembly meeting, and I had bad thoughts about these people who cut me off because it put a fear in me that I was going to reach for a drink. I didn't want to drink then, but that fear was going to hit me. But I sit in the meeting thinking the bad thoughts and accusting them more or less to myself, but thank God he gave me the right thoughts. I knew I had to accept these people as being part of my sobriety, because they had been. Well, there was one car came from Valdosta, and it was fully loaded, but they squeezed up and let me ride back with them and put me off my front gate. Well, the next morning when I got up and started to dress, I'd lost my coordination like I used to when I was coming off a bad drunk. Couldn't hardly get my clothes on. and I went to town. I had kind of, I call it a junk room. There's a few catalogs and tools and stuff up in it. I went down and tried to shave, and I was still fumbling with the electric razor. I couldn't hardly hold it and do my shaving. I got back home, and I ate breakfast, and I started to walk out the back door. The Screamy Jimmies hit me. And I couldn't stand to get close to anybody to try to talk or let them talk to me. And after about an hour and a half, I got my old junk car going, or a mechanic got it, changed plugs and put in points and so on. But I had presence of mind enough to do what I'd always been told when I first come in AA. I headed for Valdosta, looking for an AA. So when I got over there, this fellow from Atlanta, we had an understanding when he was in prison that we could handle each other's anonymity and nothing. They didn't care. So Tom Brock had started a job at Moody Field, and he hadn't got to the gate, but a fear come over him that he couldn't go on to the job. And that job was checking weights on sand and cement, water, and a concrete batch plant. He didn't know why he had to fear. It wasn't nothing to fear, but that was the shape he was in. So two or three of them left the old club room. Club room was about as wide as this. And Tom sit in one corner, and I sit in the other corner, and we didn't say anything to each other for about an hour. And we come down, and Tom made a decision to go back to Atlanta and start over again. And I got straightened out, and to this day I've had no kind of experience like that before with fear. As far as I'm concerned, God was there with me and Tom, just the presence of us being together, straightened things out. Just mention this, that you don't never have it made. You better keep your heart in the right place and depend on God as you understand it. And don't never back up from trying to help somebody that calls for help. Because I've talked with a few and heard a few talk telling their story. They got careless about that going and letting somebody else do it, and they had trouble. And that was before we had all this drug business. And if you get mixed up with drugs and alcohol after you've been around this good fellowship and living right for a while, I'm just too afraid to take any chances myself and take that chance of reaching for that first drink, because that's all it'll take for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. When Tom started off there, he reminded me of that little definition of an expert, you know, about knowing these things. Said the definition of an expert is a person who knows more and more about less and less until he knows everything about nothing. They told me when I came to this program that acceptance was the key. And I heard a little story on acceptance I want to share with you, just to kind of break in here. This man's wife came home one day, and she was fussing and fuming because she had seen him in a supper club with another woman. And so she jumped him when he got home that evening, and she said she threatened to leave him. And he said, okay, but now listen, I just want to get one thing clear with you before you make this decision. He says, before you take any action now on divorcing me and things, I want you to remember this. Said, I want you to think about this fine home here, this $75,000 home that you live in. I want you to stop for a moment and think about that nice Cadillac car that you drive. And I want you to take recognition of that liberal bank account which you spend on. And he said, now, if when you have thought this over well, you still decide to go ahead and divorce me, okay, you go right ahead. But in the meantime, I want to go out this evening to have dinner, and I want you to go with me. Now get your clothes on, and let's go out and eat. And so she did, and they went to a very nice restaurant. They were sitting there having their meal, and a couple came in, and she reached over and punched her husband, and she said, say, isn't that your boss there? He says, yes, it sure is. She said, well, who's that with him? And he said, oh, that's his mistress. And she said, not half as pretty as ours, is she? A little acceptance. Now, we also accept these Al-Anons into our fellowship, you know, as they accepted us, or they wouldn't have been here and went through it with us. And I think it's very fitting at this time. I know one fine one that always has some fine things to say that has come into our program and taken it up and really carried forth with it. Virginia F. from Myrtle Beach. Would you say a word for us, Virginia, please?
Jerry didn't warn me. Hi, everybody. And I am so happy to be here. For I know you people on the committee, I know just how you feel. And Cornel and I just couldn't wait to get here. So it's really good to be here at this first Fellowship of Pine Mountain. I think of Jack Sargent. And I don't suppose Jack cares if I break his anonymity. But Jack said, when I came to AA, I fell in love, and I've been in love with the fellowship ever since. And this fits me so well by the way I feel about this beautiful fellowship, because it has certainly brought so much into my life. The first night that I attended an AA meeting and I heard the 12 steps read, I fell in love with them, and especially step 3. And it is still dear to my heart. I am an Al-Anon, and I went on a little bit later on and met a good recovering alcoholic and even fell in love with him. And we still have a love affair going. I'm one of the fortunate ones in the program. I've never had to live with a practicing alcoholic. And I had a little trouble identifying at first in Al-Anon, for simply most of the ones that are there are wives or mothers of practicing or have lived through this. And I've been blessed so far. And sometimes I wonder, because I know it's no happen so that I'm in the fellowship. And I cannot help but wonder sometime, why are you here, Virginia? What instrument can you be? What are you here to learn that it might be easier for you? So I don't know what tomorrow might be and why I could be being prepared, because I think this is a wonderful field to be prepared in, of understanding life and understanding problems and understanding this illness of alcoholism. In Al-Anon, I have learned so much and I am continuing to learn. I love the fellowship, and we're so proud of our little Al-Anon group in Myrtle Beach. We're growing, and it just makes me bubble all over to see people come in, and in a few months you see a smile, and you see glances exchanged between husband and wife, and you know that something is coming back there. There's no joy that I have found anywhere else that can bring you this happiness. So mine is all just a love affair with this fellowship, and it's so good to see some of the first people that ever greeted me into the fellowship here and have shown me love and taken me in. I came mighty jittery and ill at ease and everything else on my honeymoon, if this is your honeymoon. I went to my honeymoon at St. Simon's by the Sea, and I'll tell you, you really can get razzed. And the only thing was, I said, well, it can't happen but once. Thank you for asking me, and I'm looking forward to this weekend.
Thank you so much, Virginia. You know, something been very popular as a bestseller here recently, and I think we have stories and feelings and happenings and miracles here that are far superior, and they don't have to be written in four letters to spell out our love story, do they? We always give equal time. There's a boy, Alan, on here from Atlanta. Tom, would you like to come up and say a word for us? Tom B? Oh, Bill B. Yeah, Bill. Bill? Boy, Alan on.
Hey, Jerry, I didn't even get my name called right. I am Bill. And I'm extremely happy to be here. I'm Al-Anon. I am a little less confused now. I'm a little less anxious, I suppose. It's meant a great deal to me so far. And if the time ahead can be compared in any way to the time that has gone by since I first became acquainted with Al-Anon, I'll be more than delighted. I will feel that I have found my life's calling, actually. Now, I'm a native of this county. I wasn't asked out, Speedy, but I might have been. I started out some time ago with an idea that maybe materialism was a proper goal. And it wasn't long until, I had connected with a proposition that caused me to feel like that I was the answer to all problems. Any problems that came up were referred to me, and it wasn't long until I had a manager put into my title, and that just fixed me up good. So I proceeded, I guess, to try to run too many things, and it finally dawned on me that maybe I don't run everything. And so as that thought comes clearer and clearer, and as I begun to take the steps and to trust in this higher power that has come to mean so very much to me and to my family, as I begun to take those steps and think about them and to apply them, as I saw them, and as the Lord gave me wisdom to see them, I have found that people smile, and that people have love and affection in their eyes, and that they have their point of view, and that they have the right to say what they want to do. I can manage nobody but myself. It took me a long time to realize that. I can manage nobody successfully but myself, I feel like, and I certainly can't change anybody. So now the road ahead appears to be brightening as if the sun has just come up, or just as if the sun is rising. It's a much clearer view, and it's something that I'm very eager about and am very anxious to be a part of for a long, long time to come. I can see happiness there, and I'm looking for that, and I'm reminded again and again that although this is a selfish program, it's a program that is shared by all of us, and I'm just extremely pleased to be a part of it. And I appreciate so much the opportunity to be with you at this meeting here in Pine Mountain. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Bill. Well, they said, you to say, does anybody else have anything to say in those famous last words? I know of a little circle of AAs in a meeting who were giving a little piece of their story as they went around the room. Each one told of his trials and tribulations, what he'd gone through. And they usually all said they lost their home, they lost their family, they lost their wife. And it went around the complete circle, and there was a little new fella sitting there, shaking, trying to hold his hands under the table. And they turned to him and asked him if he'd like to say a word. And he said, yes. They said, I've heard you all speak about the things you lost and all. And almost invariably, each one of you said you lost your wife. And most of them, you all said you got them back. He said, my question is this, fellas, do you have to take them back? Well, I think we have time for about one more person. A little fellow with a big grin that comes from Atlanta. I told him I was going to take his card away from him, fine him $250 and blacklist him if I didn't see him over at this table here tonight. I usually do, but he's a fine fellow, and I'd like to wind up this program by having Gene say a few words for us, if you would, please. Gene E. from Atlanta.
Thank you, Jack. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Gene.
It's Gene Ellis. I'm from Atlanta, and I'm from alcoholism. I thought Atlanta was the only place they had alcoholics, but since I've been in AA, I see they have them all over the world. But I sure am glad that Howard and I could be here tonight, because, and I'm sorry my wife, who, like Jerry was saying, I didn't know for a while there whether I qualified for the program, because the first few speakers I ever heard, they lost their everything they had, including their wife, and I lost about everything I had except her. And she did stay with me, and she helped me very much. In fact, I remember the first night that is still vivid to me. I'd been under the weather for about a week, I think. And I didn't know exactly what to do. So Dorothy called a fella. I came in AA through the back door. I didn't know all you could do was to pick up the phone and somebody would come to help you. And Dorothy finally, her boss, the office, knew a fella that was in AA. And I thought that this would be the way to go. So this fella from Atlanta came over that night. It was on a Saturday night. I remember that. At that time, I had lost the right to manage my household. I had lost the right to manage a bank account or whatever it was. I had lost the right to manage my children. And I just about lost everything I had. So that night, I was pretty low. I didn't know which way to turn. And besides that, my biggest decision, I remember what my big decision was that night, was whether to wear a coat to the meeting or whether to wear a jacket and a sport coat, shirt. And that was a real decision for me. I don't think I ever really decided. I don't remember what I wore. But anyway, the night Joe came, he came back to the bedroom there to get me. And I remember so well, and I don't remember anything of the meeting I went to, but this, sometimes these first impressions last. And he says, do you really want to stop drinking? And I says, I sincerely do. But I said, if these people would get off my back and leave me alone, I'd be all right. And old Joe twirled on me, and I thought, He pointed his finger in my face and he said, "Did you ever stop for 1 minute and think that you might be the problem?" And you know, I never had. I never had thought of that. So we started out the door. Dorothy was in the living room and wringing her hands. She really wanted somebody to take me away, you know, and just get rid of me for a while. And she says, "Take him away and just do anything you want to with him. It doesn't make any difference to me." And old Joe, bless his heart, he whirled on her and he says, "Young lady," he says, "you've been living with an alcoholic. And when you live with an alcoholic," says, "you're sick yourself. And you're just as sick as he is, because this is a family disease." And boy, that guy, I mean, he was 10 foot tall. I said, "See, I told you so." And I went out the door and I had a new outlook. I said, "Joe," I said, "you know, I've been trying to tell Dorothy that for a long time." And I said, "We're going to get along fine." And we did. I remember going to my first meeting. I really don't remember much about it. I know that I didn't believe these you people were alcoholics because you looked too happy. And I couldn't identify because I didn't, you all said you hadn't had a drink and I took you at your word, but I couldn't understand how you could be so happy without whiskey because I had found it necessary to drink for quite a number of years. And I couldn't figure out. And then the first meeting I remember, you said something about a higher power and God. And when God came when you mentioned God, I said, "Uh-oh." I said, "Here we go again." Because I thought that, like someone said tonight, I thought I had lost the right to ask God for anything. Because I had failed, and I didn't have any right to ask him for another favor because I never had sincerely asked him for anything. But I knew that this was my last chance. Like everyone else that had come here, I knew I had to do something. And I knew I had to do something different than the way I had been trying to do. Because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That was one of my biggest thing in life. I wanted to take that one drink or two drinks and leave it alone, but I couldn't do it. So I finally made up my mind. You kept mentioning the steps. And then when I found out that when you left me a little opening there, you said, "A God as I understand him." And I got that through my head. And I did find a God. And I do pray, and I do have my own God. My conception of my God now is different than it was when I came into AA. But when you mentioned, I said, "What do you do?" I says, "I've been sober. I sobered up. I stayed off whiskey for a year one time just to prove that I wasn't an alcoholic. That was the most miserable year of my life." But I said, "What is the difference?" And you told me that these steps were here. And at that time, I couldn't read the steps. They were all blurred, but I got hold of the Serenity Prayer. It kept me going my eyes could quit double vision and where I could read the steps. And from there, I knew that was the thing I hadn't been doing. And you told me to go to meetings, and I went to meetings. And I'll say this, I had a sponsor, and boy, he was a sponsor. I had no choice. Nobody asked me to go to, you know, if I wanted to go to a meeting every night. He says, "You're going to make 90 meetings in 90 days. Every night, he'd call. He says, "Are you going to meet tonight? Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I can't have the car tonight," or something. "I'll be by for you in 30 minutes. Be ready." He'd call up and he'd make arrangements. When he'd get tired of fooling with me, he'd get somebody else to come by. He says, "I'll have somebody by for you." I went to so many meetings, and I just enjoyed them. But there's only one thing that I... There's one time that Joe called. He told me that he was going to have to go to Florida one long weekend and that he wouldn't be back till Monday. So I went to a meeting Friday night and Saturday night, and I hadn't seen a television show for the last month or two. And so I had even Dorothy was even feeling sorry for me. And so I said, well, I think I'll stay home tonight, knowing Joe wasn't going to call me. I said, I think I'll stay home tonight. And she agreed. She says, well, I don't, says, you haven't seen on TV tonight. And I said, that would be all right with me. Because I was still asking. Nobody asked me for any decisions. But anyway, about 7 o'clock, the phone rang. Where you going tonight, Gene? It was Joe. I says, I thought you were in Florida. He says, I just got back. I was going to watch the TV. He says, I'll be over for you in about 30 minutes. Be ready. And then he played a trick on me. He called me in after I got where I could drive and, you know, kind of knew what I was doing and where to go. He said, he called me. He said, I want to see you tonight. I want to talk to you. I said, good. I'll meet you over in such and such a group. Okay, I'd go there, no Joe. I'd get home. I'd call him. I said, Joe, I says, I was there. You weren't. I said, where were you? He says, you were there, wasn't you? So, I mean, I've made those 90 meetings. And doing that, I'll be honest with you, some of my, it was really hard, but I can say this, as bad as I felt and as many meetings I went to, when I got through from the meeting, I felt a lot better than I did before I went. And I have been going to meetings ever since. And then the fringe benefits of things like this come up. And I remember very well the first time a lot of people that I wondered what happened to them, you know, my friends. I've lived in Atlanta all my life. And anytime you see a guy that's been drinking an awful lot of whiskey, and I knew it, and all of a sudden he gets awful happy and gets awful whiskey, I know now that something's happened to him, and nine times out of ten he's going to AA. So I found a lot of my friends in AA that I wondered how they could quit. So one night this fella called, and he said, Gene, we're going to have a retreat up at Mont Eagle, Tennessee. I didn't even know where Mont Eagle, Tennessee was. He says, we'd like for you to come. So I went myself the first meeting because I didn't know, and Dorothy didn't know either. She said, well, you go and find out what it is. So I went up Friday, and I had to room with a fella, and he was late. He was going to be from Kentucky, from Louisville. And so I waited for him, and he never did come in, and he was late. About 9 o'clock, I guess somebody knocked on the door. I was staying in the motel across the road. Somebody knocked on the door, and there's a girl there. She says, are you Gene Ellis? I said, yeah. She says, this no. She says, I said, yeah. I said, do you have anybody in with you? I said, no, I'm waiting on a fella. Says, well, I'm the fella. I said to myself, I said, you know, this AA, I mean, this is all right. I just started laughing, and in a few minutes, somebody dared to do it. And in a few minutes, this guy walks in. And, at that time, I'd gotten so used to asking people. I said, the first thing I do after they tell me their name, I said, how long you been in, you know? And he introduced to Bill Wallace. Bill says, I said, have you been in AA very long? And this was 5 years ago. He says, 20 years next month. Well, I looked at him, you know, I just couldn't imagine anybody being sober 20 years, you know, with me. And we had a great weekend, and I've been every 6 months since. And I love these retreats, and I say this is fringe benefits. And we enjoy, and Dorothy and I go to every one we can. And this is so great to be down here, and I certainly am glad that y'all started this thing here. Thanks a lot.
Thank you a lot, Gene. You wound us up with a big bang here tonight. I, too, had a decision to make, and I went to my first AA meeting. It was the dead of winter in January, cold as blue blazes. I had a brand new top coat, and I left it at home. I decided I'd better not wear it down there. Some of those drunks might steal it. Well, I want to thank all of you speakers who have shared with us tonight on this little informal program. It's been a pleasure to hear from all of you. And we are going to have some coffee and things in the back here now, so let's all get together and get acquainted and have some real fellowship. Those of you who will you please stand and let's close this meeting in our customary way by reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you.